Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 I'm going to read this morning from Canto 3, Chapter 21, Text 18. And little context here, the person speaking is Kardama Muni, and he's having a conversation with God. Maybe one day we'll have a conversation with God when we hear him speak that prayer. He's offering prayers to the personality of Godhead, but the personality of Godhead is directly in front of him. The place is deep in the forest. The time is at the dawn of creation. In the beginning of creation, well, going back some number of chapters, Vidura is having a dialogue. He's asking questions of Maitreya. The scene of that discussion is high in the mountains, in the Himalayas, just after Krishna left, ending his worldly pastimes, when Krishna was explaining, answering questions to Uddhava, the Uddhava Gita section of Srimad Bhagavatam has just taken place. Krishna left. Before leaving, Krishna said to Maitreya, who was hearing Uddhava Gita, very soon Vidura is going to come to this remote place, and I have some service for you. I'd like you to instruct him in all that you've heard from me. Give him transcendental knowledge. And Krishna left. So sometime past Vidura, a few days later, Vidura came, some discussion with Uddhava, then he went, or under the direction of Uddhava, to find Maitreya. He found Maitreya and began questioning Maitreya about Krishna. And the area of concern at the beginning of his questions was about the process of creation. Now, if you had the opportunity to ask a perfectly realized soul about Krishna, would you ask about creation? Probably not. But that's the difference between us and Vidura. He asked the preliminary understanding. In order to properly understand Krishna, is to understand this world in which we live properly. And if you take the trouble to go through the description of this third canto carefully, it's going is a little difficult at times, but it gives a really, really, really amazing, wonderful picture of the unfolding of Krishna's energies, which is just a reflection of the unfolding of Krishna's energies in the spiritual world, because his pastimes are but an exhibition of his energies as he associates with his devotees. But Krishna isn't only interested in his devotees. Krishna is especially interested in his devotees because they're especially interested in him. And like we were discussing a little bit last night, Krishna is also interested in the living entities that have gone away from him. Naturally, like in a family, if someone is left, then the family members are concerned about that person who has left and the difficulties they're undergoing and all of that kind of thing. So Krishna's like that. We're like Krishna. Small little Krishnas. Little samples of Krishna. So he's very concerned. And he wants to give them an opportunity to come back to him in a loving mood. language of Bhakti Siddhanta, to enter again into the eternal rasa dance with me. So he then is the original cause of creation. He is the cause, and creation is the effect of his own energies, the purpose of which is to restore the living entities back to their rightful position, if they apply themselves properly. Of course, many don't, but at least the opportunity is being provided. So, in the course of earlier chapters, that process of creation, what Lord Vishnu does, then subsequently the sub-creation, that which Brahma does, they're in detail described as the workings of Krishna's energies. Then Maitreya, Vidura hearing from Maitreya, asks what happened next in the sub-creation after Brahma appears. Specifically, he asks, what did the Prajapatis, such as Swayambhuva Manu and Marichi and other Prajapatis, what did they do to help in the sub-creation part that Brahma does, because they're simply assisting Brahma. So in response to that, he goes way back into the creation and then the sub-creation, and then he starts speaking about Swayambhuva Manu, who's the so we're at the beginning of creation, the first of the 14 Manus, is Swayambhuva Manu, who directly appears from the body of Lord Brahma, along with his wife, they didn't have to, like little kids grow up, get married, they were adults. Brahma could do it. Yeah. And then they in turn produced Praja, two sons, three daughters. Priyavrata was the elder son, and Uttanapada, the younger son, which we're going to hear about in the fourth canto, Uttanapada and Dhruva, his son, and all of that. But he then, Maitreya focuses on, he mentions briefly the two other sisters, Prasuti and Akuti, and who they married. They were, by Brahma's arrangement, these are daughters of Swayambhuva Manu, but they were married to other sages for the purpose of creating praja, as you know, the function of prajapatis. Then he focuses on Devahuti. So there's a whole, 15 chapters describing Devahuti, Devahuti's marriage to Kardava Muni, and so many things. The teachings of Kapila Dev, the son of Devahuti and Kardava Muni. 15 chapters. And the section that we're reading from is Kardava Muni receiving, before he was married, receiving instructions from Brahma, please assist me. Same thing he said to the four Kumaras. Please assist me in creating, populating, filling up the universe. And the Kumaras declined, but Kardama accepted Lord Brahma's instruction. And then he went to perform the Yoga Dharma for 10,000 years, a process of meditation. And Prabhupada details, along with the meditation, it wasn't just like meditation on nothing. It was devotional service kind of meditation, including hearing and chanting and other processes of bhakti, and he achieved perfection. And the perfection was Lord Vishnu came before him, being pleased by his devotion and his pure consciousness. And then there's verses describing the form of Lord Vishnu descending on the back of Buddha, very similar, almost identical, but not exactly identical, to Dhruva. Same period of time, beginning of creation. Dhruva saw Lord Vishnu. Kardamuni saw Lord Vishnu. And the description of him is very wonderful. And course, Karadeva Muni felt very wonderful. He was experienced symptoms of ecstatic love, and he paid obeisances before the Lord and began offering beautiful prayers, spontaneous, beautiful prayers. He's vastly learned and a perfected being, so his prayers are important. And the previous section is glorification of the Lord, appreciation of the Lord's kindness. He's kind upon everyone, even those who are approaching him for some worldly thing, which makes it sound like, you know, that's not me, but you're still kind upon those who want material things. But then he likens himself to someone who wants material things, and he specifies what he wants. He wants to marry a qualified wife who has qualities similar to him, and that he can perform his household duties and gradually perfect his life, which is a little unusual because he already has perfection of life. He's seen the person who's got it. So it's a little... Anyway, there's nice instruction about Sakam Bhakti and how to go from Sakam Bhakti to Nishkam Bhakti, or devotional service with desire, devotional service without any material desire. And he emphasizes the process of hearing and chanting as a means of going beyond material desire and the whole program of material existence. Then that's the background. So now this verse, text 17. Excuse me, text 18. And in text 18 and 19, he's focusing again on the Supreme Lord and his function of creation. And he creates through his time energy. I'll read the verse. Your wheel, so Prabhupada has translated it, chakra. Now, chakra isn't in the Sanskrit, but anyway, he says, your wheel, which means time. That's clear from the purport. Your wheel, which has three naves, N-A-V-E. I looked it up. Not a usual word. I'm not accustomed to hearing that word used. The word in the Sanskrit is nabhi. So nabhi means navel. In conventional usage, according to Wikipedia, nave is the central part of a place of worship, like a church or a cathedral. There's the entrance door, and then this huge open area called the nave, and then it ends where there's the altar, a raised area, like the temple room. Mm-hmm. In our kind of reference, it's the temple room, the place where you come before the Lord. Nave. And interesting that that's the word that's used, because it indicates actually the three phases of time, past, present, and future. And through the influences of past, present, and future, the wheel, or time, brings everything into being and sustains it for some time and withdraws it. And that's his wheel, or his time energy, in three phases, past, present, future. Your wheel, which has three naves, rotates around the axis of the imperishable Brahman. Imperishable Brahman. So, Brahman is imperishable. It doesn't come into being and go out of being. It's Sat. It's eternally existing. Past, present, and future rotate around eternal existence. Creation is a byproduct of eternal existence. The external energy is a reflection of the internal energy. This like chapter 15, Bhagavad Gita. The material world is a reflection of the spiritual world. And the reflecting surface is what? Those of you that went to Gita camp and studied chapter 15, yeah, you're looking. Mm-hmm. Remember? What's the, the banyan tree that's roots up and branches down? Remember that one? It wasn't so long ago. I saw all the t-shirts. Mm-hmm. So, what's that? That's a tree that's reflected on a lake. And what's the lake in this material realm? What's the lake? What's the reflecting surface? Desire. Oh yeah, desire. Desire. Now, when there's no material desire, there's no lake. There's no reflection. Because there's only reflection when there's desire. Specifically, meaning desire separate from Krishna, enjoying separately from Krishna, that kind of desire. Because desire in its natural function is desire in relation to Krishna. Specifically desiring Krishna's happiness. But when the misuse of free will takes place and the living entity withdraws that desire in relation to Krishna's happiness and thinks otherwise, then you've got a lake. Big one. Called material desire. And then on that lake of material desire comes the material world with the three phases of time, past, present, future. And it's all rotating around eternal existence, timelessness. Pretty cool, huh? So, here's the sentence again. Your wheel, time, which has three knaves, rotates around the axis of the imperishable Brahman. So there's the absolute truth has these three aspects, Sat Chit Ananda, or Brahman Paramatma Bhagavan. Brahman is the Sat feature, eternal existence, or eternal time, or that which is substantial, so Brahman, that which exists. Sat. And the asat rotates around sat. Just as the reflection of an object has its existence within sat, within the object itself. Asat has its existence from sat. But asat disappears when desire, separate from Krishna, disappears. And that means also the time energy, past, present, and future, disappears. Eternal relationship with Krishna. That's our natural condition. And the other is an illusory condition, facilitated by time, in its three naves, or three features of past, present, future. Your wheel has 13 spokes, indicated in the purport. What's 13?
Trayodasa.
So what's the, let me see, 13 in the purport. And we'll read the purport when we get there. It has 13 spokes, 360 joints, 6 rims, and numberless leaves. marked upon it. Wheel. Though its revolution cuts short this lifespan of the entire creation, it destroys everything. This wheel of tremendous velocity cannot touch the lifespan of the devotees of the Lord. Purport. The time factor cannot affect the lifespan of the devotees. In Bhagavad Gita, it is stated that a little execution of devotional service saves one from the greatest danger. The greatest danger is transmigration of the soul from one body to another. And only devotional service to the Lord can stop this process. It is stated in the Vedic literatures. Harim, Mina, Na, Shritim, Taranti. Without the mercy of the Lord, one cannot stop the cycle of birth and death. In Bhagavad Gita, it is stated that only by understanding the transcendental nature of the Lord and His activities, His appearance and disappearance, can one stop the cycle of death and go back to Him. The time factor is divided into many fractions of moments, as in an earlier chapter, whole chapter on the divisions of time, called Calculation of Time by the Atom. Anyway, moments, hours, months, years, periods, seasons, etc., all the divisions in this verse are determined according to the astronomical calculation of Vedic literature. There are six seasons. That's the six mentioned up top. Six rims are the six seasons, called ritus. And there is the period of 4 months called chaturmasya. Three periods of 4 months completes 1 year. According to Vedic astronomical calculation, there are 13 months. There's the 13. The 13th month is called Adhi Mas or Mala Mas and is added every third year. Purushottam. The time factor, however, cannot touch the lifespan of the devotees. In another verse, second canto, in another verse it is stated that when the sun rises and sets, it takes away the life of all living entities, but it cannot take away the life of those who are engaged in devotional service. Last sentence. Time is compared here to a big wheel which has 360 joints, probably days of the year. Six rims in the shape of seasons, and numberless leaves in the shape of moments. It rotates on the eternal existence, Brahman. A little technical, but the process of creation is the topic, one of the primary topics of this canto. Sarva and Visarga, and also a little bit in the descendants of Manu. Those are three of the 10 topics of the Bhagavatam. So, interwoven within this dialogue between Kardamuni and the personality of Godhead, he's attributing creation to the personality of Godhead, which he effects through time. And there are different ways of presented within the Bhagavatam of describing how the Lord uses his time energy to create. And Brahmasamhita does also. And interestingly, this is the topic of our seminar in Gidnagar, is using time in Krishna's service. I'm contemplating the Naperville program, making a presentation there that I'm going to be doing in Ginnagari, which explains what time is. And a little, not sure, inclined, a little not so sure, because in one sense it's a little technical what time is. But gee whiz, it's one of the five primary topics of Bhagavad Gita. And he asked people, you know, when you think of modes of nature, or living entity, or karma, or Ishwara, you got a lot to say. What do you have to say about time? It's really short. Krishna says, time I am the destroyer of all things. End of essay. But time is very important. I mean, by proper use of that which we don't have too much to say about, we can achieve perfection of life. And if without it, we're stuck in the samsara cycle again and again and again and again and again and again. So, that's the pause. I'm thinking, should I do this? And I think I will. just, I guess, a couple of things, and just go on to the next verse. Kardama Muni is seeing the personality of Godhead. He's described him or addressed him like we find in Bhagavad Gita, the names by which Krishna is addressed by Arjuna to significant, O Keshava, O Rishikesha, O Achyuta, like that. Each Prabhupada explains each name is significant. It's invoking an aspect of Krishna, and it shows Arjuna's appeal to him in different ways. Similarly, this is Lord Vishnu, and he's being addressed in different ways by Kardama Muni. One place he calls him the leader of religion, and he's the follower. And he's the follower by following the codes of the Vedas given by the leader, by the personality of Godhead, in order for one to fulfill desires. And then he's the source of transcendence because he also gives the means to go beyond fulfilling material desires through the medium of the Vedas. It describes him, he's calling or addressing him in different ways. He's the source of peace because that's something we all want. Anyway, here he's addressing him as the source of time, because he's in this position of being a prajapati, and so that means being involved with creation, and specifically the part of creation is producing the population that's going to fill this big empty universe. That's his service. So he's dependent upon the Lord, and he's dependent upon the time energy of the Lord to do his part within creation. So he's acknowledging something that's very important for us to acknowledge. When we do anything, whatever, you know, fill in the blank, anything, walk across the room, scratch your head, do anything, we're in a dependent position. We're dependent upon the personality of Godhead. And to enable us to do something, one of the factors that we require is the time. You know, so one of the things that's going to be discussed in Ginnagari is time management. But the point here is time management, best time management is understanding what the source of time is. And then since it's an energy, a direct energy of the personality of Godhead, we have to use it accordingly, like very conscientiously. and proper utilization can carry one to timelessness if you use time properly. And the opposite, if you don't use it properly, can lead to degradation. So for the devotees of the Lord, the time energy doesn't take away their life. It's certain, that's what's being said. The lifespan of the devotee cannot be touched by time. Now, it doesn't mean you become a devotee and you won't die. Whether you're a devotee or not a devotee, the body is perishable. But as the reference to that second canto verse, with each rising and setting of the sun, the activities of the devotee are connecting the devotee to eternal life. And with the rising and setting of the sun, for those who are not devotees, it's their day is one day less, or their life is one day less. Like Prabhupada says it this way, when you're born, you say, now the child is 2 days old. But actually, they're 2 days dead. 2 days closer to death. But for the devotee, it's that much closer to eternality. In that sense, their lifespan, the coming to eternal life is approached through the passage of time for the devotee. Entering into the realm of timelessness by engaging whatever Krishna has created through his time energy in Krishna's service. Recognizing Krishna as the source of that energy, the source of the time. Kardamuni, he submitted his desire before Lord Vishnu to fulfill his material desire. Material desire having a wife of similar disposition. And I'll just read it. Desiring to marry a girl of like disposition who may prove to be a veritable cow of plenty in my married life. To satisfy my lustful desire, I too have sought the shelter of your lotus feet, which are the source of everything. For you are like a desired tree. Then he goes on saying that everybody has to follow the ways of material nature. And the purpose of submission unto you, following them, O embodiment of religion, I shall also bear oblations for you, who are eternal time. We're constantly engaged in trying to satisfy desires. I'll read. Under your directions, all conditioned souls, as if bound by rope, are constantly engaged in satisfying their desires. Remember the lake example. So there's the unregulated, there's the regulated, according to the codes of the Vedas. And then he goes to the transcendental personalities who are not what he calls stereotyped. They've given up the stereotype of chasing material desires, regulated or unregulated, and they engage in hearing and chanting your glories. They've taken shelter of the umbrella of your lotus feet by drinking the intoxicating nectar of your qualities and activities in discussions with one another. and can be freed from the primary necessities of the material body. Wow. The primary necessities, like not optional, but necessities. Not luxuries, but necessities. One can be freed from the body. Well, to speak of the necessities of the body by that means. Then right away, so he goes into time. Previously, he's addressed him as eternal time. Now he's going into this, you know, eternal time is the realm of Brahman, the realm of spirit. I'm within this realm of matter, so I'm under the influence of this other feature of time. It's a deep subject. Like, you know, how do we go from Sakam Bhakti to Nishkam Bhakti? That's the teaching, and there are different ways of expressing it and demonstrating it. But one of the ways is proper use of time. So, for the purpose of this regulated activity through the codes of the Vedas is there's submission to the personality of Godhead, because if I accept the regulation of the codes of the Vedas, then that's submission to the person who is the source of the Vedas. My interest is fulfilling desires, but there's submission to the source of the Vedas for the fulfillment of those desires. So it's gradual. Gradual. Very, very, very gradual. The purpose of that gradual is to come to the position of submission to the personality of Godhead directly. Or one can, by hearing and chanting about him, submit to him directly. Or some of both, depending on one's position. But the goal is that position of full surrender, submission to the personality of Godhead. So, the next verse, text 19. My dear Lord, you alone create the universes, O personality of Godhead, desiring to create these universes. You create them, maintain them, and again wind them up by your own energies, which are under the control of your second energy, called Yoga Maya. So, eternal time is the source of time, and Yoga Maya is the source of Mahamaya. And Mahamaya is under the control or influence of Yoga Maya. That detail is described in Brahma Samhita. Creation takes place when the Supreme Lord simply contemplates that the living entities who are in the dormant stage within him during cosmic annihilation, he wants them to come back to him. He just has that desire, and the internal potency, Rama, knowing his desire, she makes the arrangement. And the arrangement is the glance of Mahavishnu is carrying by the influence of Rama, the living entities in time energy, and then entrusted to Shambhu, who then carries the glance to impregnate the Pradhan, and then the whole thing starts to unfold without all the rest of the detail. But Rama, understanding his desire, makes these arrangements. So Yoga Maya, the internal potency, is making the arrangement for this. Literally, it's described as a leela, an auxiliary leela, because that language of Bhakti is not secondary. The primary is his association with Rama. This other is an auxiliary or secondary, for the purpose of, because he has compassion for the fallen souls. But, you know, connect that to our life as devotees. You know, our thought sometimes is, Lord Chaitanya desires that the souls regain their natural position of devotional service to Krishna. So on behalf of Lord Chaitanya, we engage in the Sankirtan movement of Lord Chaitanya to relieve his anxiety I certainly remember this kind of being drilled into our head in the course of distributing books. This is helping to relieve the anxiety of Lord Chaitanya. The conditioned souls should have the opportunity, at least the opportunity, to again connect with devotional service to the Supreme Lord. Going on Harinam Sankirtan, or extending ourselves to the innocent population. Because that's actually the purpose of creation, without which the purpose of creation is unfulfilled. It's just, you know, the downside, like, you know, this isn't the right answer, but what the right answer is, there isn't happiness to be found in the illusory energy. So what's the alternative? The devotees of the Lord are enjoined to present the alternative. It's a service to relieve the anxiety of the Supreme Lord, or to help fulfill the purpose of creation, without which the purpose of creation is incomplete. So we have a nice service to do, a very important service to do on behalf of Krishna. And that's what it is. It's a service on behalf of Krishna. Now, we're going to go rescue the conditioned souls, who are we? We're struggling ourselves. But we're instruments of the personality of Godhead. And then the lives of those who do that, the time energy works differently than for those that don't do that. The time energy works differently. Prabhupada describes this in Isha Upanishad. For the person who is very, very, very occupied with endeavoring for material happiness, when we approach them to please take Krishna consciousness, please take this book, please come to our program, something, something, and they'll say, I'm too busy. It's one of the things they'll say. You know, I have no time. And it's true, they don't have the time, their lives are so busy, 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 busy. They're really busy. But for those who say, yes, somehow there's time. Like every one of us have had this experience of where do we find the time to chant? Because we're busy. But when we just determine somehow we're going to find the time. The time energy acts differently. It's the internal potency time energy. It's the eternal time factor. We're approaching the realm of eternal time. We're still really busy. But there's time. And then continuing and entering into the internal potency, there's always time for Krishna. So yoga maya is controlling the creation. That's what he's saying here. Rama Devi, understanding the desire of Mahavishnu, she's filled with so many potencies, and she extends the material portion, or the reflection of the internal potency, in the form of time energy. So the living entities can start out their karma again. Because without time, you don't have karma. Or when the Lord withdraws his time energy, it's time for annihilation, time is withdrawn and karma is suspended. It doesn't become zero, it's just not activated. So living entities are in this suspended state for some time. And then again, creation. So time, energy, and living entities. And then their activity begins, along with the ingredients and so many other things. So this is the beginning of creation. He's understanding that the Lord is in control of the time energy, and that time energy is under the control of the internal potency, yoga maya. And it's a lila of the Lord to create, to maintain, and to withdraw the creation. And I'm part of that because, he's saying, because I have these desires. So I wish to become, on the one hand, fulfilled in my desire in such a way I can come closer to you, and then ultimately I wish to become free from these desires. But it's all dependent upon you. And, of course, how we address ourselves to the opportunities presented to us, or in this language, how we use time. I think I'll end with that. The message is there. Any comments or questions? Statement, what's the question?
So even though he saw the Lord, his desire did not vanquish.
He's making a statement. What's the question? Why?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. There are different ways of considering why. One of those reasons is what is his relationship with the Lord? His relationship with the Lord is parental affection, vatsalya rasa. Yes? The son became his devotee, I mean his child. But the Lord became his child. The Lord became his child. He has that rasa. The Lord is going to speak and say, I understand your desire and I'll fulfill your desire. So he's likening himself to a conditioned soul when in fact he has vatsalya rasa. So he's, in one sense, one way of analyzing is he is beyond material desire, but he's likening himself to one who has material desire. There's another way of looking at it, but you know, just put that one to the side. Lord Brahma, he achieved perfection. He spoke Brahma Samhita and the end of Brahma Samhita, those beautiful Govinda prayers. He saw the Supreme Lord, as did Dhruva, as did the four Kumaras. Now, the four Kumaras, anyway, your analysis of the four Kumaras and what happened when they saw the Lord is a little, I'd like to edit that statement, but because they were already Brahma realized. Like, they didn't become something. They were already Brahman realized before they saw the Lord. And when they saw the Lord, they became devotees. Brahma saw the Supreme Lord, offered beautiful prayers. Then he still has, at the end of Brahma Samhita, he describes, I still have this material desire. So what do I do with this material desire? So we could ask the question, how does he have material desire after all of that? Same question. Because the Lord wanted him to interact with material energy in a particular way, in a particular way to create the universe. So the desire to create the universe came from the Lord. Not only the ability to do the creation, but the desire to create came from the Lord. He infused him with Srishti Shakti, the creation, the creative potency. So he's like, I want to create. So it's in that situation, one can think of that desire of Lord Brahma as a material desire, or one can think of it as fulfilling a desire of the Lord, which isn't a material desire. One can think of it as a material desire. And similarly with Kardama, the desire to have the Lord as son. Because he's appearing at the beginning of creation, and he could have taken the position like the Kumaras when Brahma said, please assist me. He could have said, no thanks. he said yes. Because there was a purpose for him, a service for him in relation to the Supreme Lord. He said yes. He's portraying himself as one who has lusty desire. Could you just like tilt this one? Thank you. He's portraying himself that way, and one could think of it that way. He wants a wife. He wants a wife of similar disposition, so he can. Now, what does he do after he has a wife of similar disposition? For another so many thousands of years, they just do tapasya together. And where's the material desire in that? He's executing duties. That's his quality. He's fulfilling the desire of the Lord. He's showing by example to others, here's how you act in a quality way. So one can say, either way, he has a mature desire or doesn't have a mature desire. He's just acting on behalf of the Lord. But that mature desire, if we want to look at it as a material desire, it's a desire in relation to the material energy for the purpose of fulfilling the desire of the Lord, which is different than our material desires. So it's possible. Let's look at Dhruva. After Dhruva saw the Lord and had no material desire, a bunch of time passed, he became king. His brother was killed by the Yakshas, and he became terribly, he became overwhelmed with anger. What's that? It's a material desire. Because anger is the younger brother of frustration, which is born of contact with devoted passion. He had to be checked by the Brahmanas to stop him. So, appropriate would be, 930-931 Bhagavad Gita. So he was 10% engaged in devotional service to the Supreme Lord. But even if there's something that looks like a material desire, Krishna says we should consider that person saintly. And he is. Otherwise, how could he have the personality of God and as a son? Anything else?
That's a practical application point for me. Two questions. Usually when beginning of the day, I kind of on the theme of time management. So we begin my day with a list of services that I would like to do. I would like to read, I would like to chant, I will take care of this service. But as the day progresses, I see that I lose interest and I lose focus, and basically I do some things and don't do the rest. And then at the end of the day, I realized that I should have done that, but I didn't do it. How do we properly manage? That's a general question, but
sure is. Well, I'll offer a couple of things. One is mode of goodness is characterized by regulation. And where there's regulation, there's time for this, there's time for that, and there's time for the other thing. So one moves from one thing to the next thing in the mode of goodness in a regulated fashion. In the world in which we live, not only ourselves, but influences outside of ourselves bring attention-demanding circumstances that's not regulated. and we need to attend them. It's not a regulated part of our day. We can't just say, you know, the house is on fire, it's not time for the house to be on fire. We have to wait. There's some things we have to do because they arise. So then we have to adjust our regulation, but to adjust regulation in the quality of goodness isn't just, you know, throwing the regulation out. But it takes, the more that one can strive for and be regulated, the more that one can handle those situations in a resilient fashion where you very quickly return to the regulation. Like, you know, Prabhupada set a nice example, or reading the biography of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. He had a very responsible and busy life, but he was very regulated, and that's how a person in the mode of goodness manages their life. They through regulation. And through, you know, then we go higher, and then it's just determination. It's, you know, dhrita vrata, great determination to stay. So if I stay connected with Krishna, I may have had my schedule to do different things, but if I was called upon to stay connected with Krishna in this way instead of the regulated way, I'm still connected with Krishna, and then when the demand of that unexpected, unanticipated event subsides, I'm back to my regulation. So that's a transcendental. When we do our regulated activities with that purpose, then that purpose becomes stronger and fixed. So then so it's practice in a regulated manner with the mood of pleasing Krishna, serving Krishna, satisfying Krishna behind the regulation. And then in the course of time, things become adjusted by Krishna. It takes a lot of practice, it takes a lot of regulation, a lot of mode of goodness, and with mode of goodness comes sensitivity to the needs of others and what their needs may be, and that's part of what my regulation should be. Sometime for that, seeing to the needs of others, while I'm seeing to my regulation and things that are needed to keep me fixed in Krishna consciousness. Something else? Yeah?
Just a follow-up on Deepak's question and your answer. So it seems that some of the activities that we do, they are time critical, and some we may have some flexibility. So are you saying that maybe in our beginning stage, as we move along in the world, part of regulation for an activity is to do it daily. It may not be the same time, but be flexible that if it doesn't happen now, it happens later. Having the flexibility.
Well, the unit of regulation may be broader than daily.
Yeah. Well.
Maybe weekly. Or something. But yes and no. Yes, but you look for a time to place that activity that got displaced by some unexpected something you attended to. Or maybe no, because my whole schedule is full. So if I don't do it now, it just isn't going to be a fit somewhere else because everywhere else is full. So then I just pick up where I left off the next day, and I'm back to regulation, and back to Schedule A, when Schedule B set me off. Now I'm back to Schedule A.
Yeah, sometimes you may be a little catch up, sometimes you may not.
Yes, yes.
One more thing. So it seems from the description, just like how Krishna's energy, material energy, it can act either way. So it seems
either way meaning?
Like if you take shelter of Krishna, then the same energy acts in the
beginning. Can facilitate our devotional service.
Internal potency.
Okay.
So it seems similar time energy of.
Yes, it is. Exactly.
And any other energy of.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. Can act in a spiritual way or a material way, depending upon our regard for Krishna. That's the essential factor, how we regard Krishna. Determines where we are, how Krishna's energies are moving us, because we're controlled. But where we are in being controlled depends on our regard for Krishna. He controls us accordingly. So time works differently, spiritual energy works differently, circumstances of life work differently for one whose regard for Krishna is strong or one whose regard for Krishna is weak. We can experience that in the course of the day or even the course of short period of time.
Yeah.